Jana. Yashodanandana Vrajajana Ranjana. Yamuna Tiravana Chari. Yamuna Tiravana Chari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopi Janavallabha Girivardhari. Gopi Janavallabha Girivardhari. Yashoda Nandana Rajajana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Rajajana Ranjana. Yamuna Tiravana Chari. Yamuna Tiravana Chari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Madhava Kunjaviyar. Jai Om Vishnu Pad, Paramahansa Puri Vrajakacharja, Ashtotra Shatashi Shimad, His Divine Grace, ISKCON Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Shimad Bhagavatam Ki, Gaura Prem Anandi. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 8. Text 9. It's again very long Sanskrit with no obvious meter. I could skip the Sanskrit, or I could murder it by my attempts to pronounce it. So what is the consensus amongst the assembled Vaishnavas?
Bhavatayam Harina Kunaka Kripana Ishvara Tatcharana Pray Brahmarayana Shiva Gana Surit Vandubhya Parivarijitaha Sharnam Chamubasadito Mam Eva Mata Pitaro Bratra Gyatin Yautakam Chaivopaye Ananyam Kanchana Vedamaya Atti Vishrabdash Chata Eva Maya Mat Parayanasya Poshana Palana Prinana Lalanam Anusuyunanushteyam Sharanayo Piksha Dosha Vidusha.
Should we do the word for word, which is kind of long? It's entirely up to the devotees. Should we do like that?
Aho bata, alas, ayam, this, harina kunakaha, the deer calf, kripanaha, helpless, ishvara tacharna pari brahmana rayena,
by the force of the rotation of the time agent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is compared to the wheel of his chariot, Svagana, own kinsmen, Suhrit, and friends, Bandubhyaha, relatives, Parivarjitaha, deprived of, Sharanam, as shelter, Cha, and Ma, me, Upasaditaha, having obtained, Mam, me, Eva, alone, Matapitaro, father and mother, Bratyagyatin, brothers and kinsmen, Yautikan, belonging to the herd, Cha, also, Eva, certainly, Upeyaya, having gotten, Na, not, Anyam, anyone else, Kanchana, some person, Veda, it knows, Mayi, in me, Ati, very great, Vishrabdaha, having faith, Cha, and Ata Eva, therefore, Maya, by me, Matparayanasya, of one who is so dependent upon me, Poshna Palana Prinam Lalanam, raising, maintaining, petting, and protecting, Anasuyuna, who am without any grudge, Anusteyam, to be executed, Sharanya, the one who has taken shelter, Upeksha, of neglecting, Doshavidusha, who knows the fault. Translation, the great king Maharaj Bharat began to think, alas, this helpless young deer, by the force of time, an agent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has now lost its relatives and friends and has taken shelter of me. It does not know anyone but me, as I have become its father, mother, brother, and relatives. This deer is thinking in this way, and it has full faith in me. It does not know anyone but me. Therefore, I should not be envious and think that for the deer, my own welfare will be destroyed. I should certainly raise, protect, gratify, and fondle it. When it has taken shelter with me, how can I neglect it? Even though the deer is disturbing my spiritual life, I realize that a helpless person who has taken shelter cannot be neglected. That would be a great fault. Purport. When a person is advanced in spiritual consciousness or Krishna consciousness, he naturally becomes very sympathetic toward all living entities suffering in the material world. Naturally, such an advanced person thinks of the suffering of the people in general. However, if one does not know of the material sufferings of fallen souls and becomes sympathetic because of bodily comforts, as in the case of Bharat Maharaj, such sympathy or compassion is the cause of one's downfall. If one is actually sympathetic to fallen, suffering humanity, he should try to elevate people from material consciousness to spiritual consciousness. As far as the deer was concerned, Bharat Maharaj became very sympathetic, but he forgot that it was impossible for him to elevate a deer to spiritual consciousness because, after all, a deer is but an animal. It was very dangerous for Bharat Maharaj to sacrifice all his regular principles simply to take care of an animal. The principles enunciated in Bhagavad Gita should be followed. Yam hi na vyatayan jyete purusham purusharshava. As far as the material body is concerned, we cannot do anything for anyone. However, by the grace of Krishna, we may raise a person to spiritual consciousness if we ourselves follow the rules and regulations. If we give up our own spiritual activities and simply become concerned with the bodily comforts of others, we will fall into a dangerous position. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Jnananjalashchalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. There are many people who want to do good for others but lack knowledge. This is the main point Prabhupada is making here, is that having a good heart, there are many good-hearted people, actually, but there are very few people who have both a good heart and the knowledge how to help people. Nowadays, the government funds billions of dollars of research in molecular biology in gerontology to prevent the body from getting old. Imagine if they gave those billions of dollars to the Hare Krishna movement to distribute Bhagavad Gita's and prasadam. Imagine if we could calculate the effect of that, doing huge internet advertising, giant billboards all over the place to chant Hare Krishna, come to the Sunday feast. Imagine what would happen. Or even just putting up a chain. With $100 billion, we could put up a chain of Govinda's restaurants and put McDonald's completely out of business. People simply don't know why. Why do people get cancer? Why do people get heart attacks? Why are these things? Because of sinful reactions, actually. It's simply because of sinful reactions. They haven't the faintest idea. So even those with a good desire to help others, because they're so abysmally ignorant of the basic facts of material existence, namely we're all being impelled by Captain Karma to the extent that we violate the rules of Dharma, everyone is forced. You cannot say no when Captain Karma comes to deliver your just dues. You cannot say, sorry, I have something else to do now. Come back later. You are forced, you are helpless. Every living entity is helplessly impelled by reactions of his previous activities if he is not a Vaishnav. The Vaishnav, simply by walking around Tulsi, even the brand new Bhakta, after 6 months, that's why Prabhupada waited 6 months to give Diksha, after 6 months of circumambulating Tulsi Devi and chanting the holy name, most of the karma is gone. A small residual amount remains, even after Diksha, that Krishna utilizes to. If you get a little carried away with false prestige, Krishna always has that little reservoir of karma to make us a little humble. But generally, most of it is destroyed, both by all the activities we do, taking Mahaprasad, chanting from the deities, circumambulating Tulsi, just the very nature of everything we're doing, just reading Bhagavad Gita, there's so many statements all over the place. Just everything we're doing is just saturated with the potency to eliminate karma. And the materialists haven't even the faintest idea why they're suffering. So much energy. I would say it's probably closer to $1 trillion because biological research now gets the most funding of all branches of science. $1 trillion a year to solve diseases, cancer and AIDS. AIDS is directly punishment from the agents of the Lord. But no one has the faintest idea. So all energies are running full speed in the wrong direction. Whereas the Vaishnavs, for a Vaishnav to get free from karma is the most insignificant byproduct of his attempt to awaken his loving relationship with Krishna. The goal is to reinstate ourselves in ecstatic love of God. This karmic reaction, what is that? That stuff is like, that's kid stuff. There was an assembly of Majumadara and Hiranya Govardhan. Govardhan and Hiranya Majumadara, the father and uncle of Raghunath Das Goswami. There was a great assembly of learned scholars. These two, Hiranya and Govardhan, Majumadara, were supporting all the Vaishnavas and Brahmins of Bengal. They were fantastically wealthy. Prabhupada said they were billionaires. When Rupa Goswami retired from governmental service, he had a boatload of gold coins, Prabhupada said. And each gold coin, now everything is so devalued. I don't know what a gold coin would be worth. Probably $1,000. A big, heavy, 1 ounce gold. At least $500. So imagine you have a boatload full of them. And the price of everything was unbelievably cheap. So because of devotion to Krishna, that's like an insignificant byproduct. The pure devotees, even Sakama Bhaktas, Govardhan and Hiranya Majumadara were actually Sakama Bhaktas. They were not pure devotees. They were very exalted. The son was Raghunath Das Goswami. He was the most exalted personality. He was utterly detached. Never throughout his entire life did he even allow his tongue the slightest bit of enjoyment. It's described in Antilila chapter 3. He didn't have the slightest tinge, not even once. We can hardly imagine such an exalted person. Because he's drinking the nectar internally. If you're drinking the nectar of Krishna consciousness internally, why do you need to gratify your senses externally? The attempt to gratify senses externally is a symptom of someone who's not experiencing ecstatic love, because the taste of Krishna consciousness is infinitely superior. Param drishtva nivartite, that's what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, text 59. Param drishtva, the higher... Drishtva literally means vision, seeing. Para means superior, and nivartite means to renounce. So by experiencing the higher realm, the loftier strata of bhakti, we naturally, vairagya is just simply a byproduct of becoming a serious devotee. Renunciation is an automatic byproduct. What, that which the yogis work like anything for so long to attain, the bhaktas, the new bhaktas, especially the book distributors, get effortlessly. So these Hiranya and Govardhan Majumadara, they're actually Sakama Bhaktas. But they were so pious, as we know, there are many Indians who are extremely pious, so they like to have Bhagavat Saptaha, or another such meetings, to discuss Bhagavat Katha. That's the goal of human life. Even they're not pure, they know the goal of human life is Bhagavat Katha, Krishna Katha. That's the goal of human, that's everything. Everything we're doing in this temple is meant to give us Krishna Katha and give other folks Krishna Katha. And if, as Prabhupada is saying in the purport, if we neglect our own Krishna Katha, we will get all dried up very quick. It's very fast. They will get all dried up. So this is our life and soul, actually. Hearing and chanting is our life and soul. So they invited Govardhan and Hiranya Majumadara, were very humble. They had very great qualities, and they thought that the only person who could really describe adequately the glories of Krishna's holy name was the Nam Acharya, Haridas Thakur, who happened to be living nearby. So they invited him to the assembly. And he's the personification of humility. Haridas Thakur was the personification of humility. Although he was the most qualified person, he was so humble. When he came to the assembly, he just sat down in the back and didn't say anything. Internally, he was always chanting. Everyone could see that he was like totally in ecstasy, constantly. He chanted close to 20 hours per day. His entire eating and sleeping took 2 hours a day. Haridas Thakur. There's an entire chapter. There's two chapters in Chaitanya Charitamrita. He gets two chapters, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Anjali chapter 3, which is entitled The Glories of Haridas Thakur. Anjali chapter 11 is the passing away of Haridas. He was so exalted when he felt like leaving this world, he came to Lord Chaitanya. And he said, I can't tolerate being on the planet when you're not here. Because he had so much love for Lord Chaitanya. So he said, please let me leave first. And Lord Chaitanya said, but how will I be happy if you go away? And he, by his devotion, he forced He never wanted to force the Lord, but he actually forced the Lord to sit down, and he was staring at the Lord, and he took the Lord's lotus feet and put them on his chest. And while chanting the holy name, he just gave up his life, like Bhishma Dev. He could give up his body whenever he felt like it. So he's an amazing personality, actually. He's Lord Brahma, of course. Actually, there's a book called Navadvip Dham Mahatmya by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And this gives some fascinating insight into right after the Brahma Vimohan Lila, which is chapter 13 of the 10th canto, when Lord Brahma is bewildered, that's the 13th chapter, and when he offers prayers is the 14th chapter. And after that, Krishna forgave him for all intents and purposes. Brahma offered his prayers, Krishna was just sort of sitting there waiting for him to get done so he could play with his friends. But he didn't say anything bad, he sort of accepted it. It was like, silence means acceptance, Prabhupada said. But Brahma felt bad, he felt really bad. He thought he had stepped way out of line because of his purity. Actually, he was impelled, the whole thing was arranged by Krishna, because Krishna wanted to satisfy the loving mood of the mothers of Vraj Dham. The elderly gopis all wanted to be like Mother Yashoda. See, there are many deeper levels. This is a fascinating study of Srimad Bhagavatam and Vaishnav theology. Whenever you read a pastime, there are like layers and layers of meaning and depth to it. So superficially, Indra got carried away and lifted and made Krishna lift Govardhan Hill. Actually, Krishna wanted to lift Govardhan Hill, so he inspired Indra to do that. There's deeper levels and understandings that the great acharyas give us. And with Lord Brahma, Krishna had a desire to fulfill the desires of his pure devotees. This is Krishna's extreme happiness. The pure devotees of Vrindavan are so exalted they conquer the Lord. The Lord is actually completely conquered. There are many statements in Shastra. He's completely conquered. Of course we know Mother Yashoda binding Krishna, but in general, in so many ways, left and right, up and down, when Sridhama wants to climb on Krishna's shoulders, Krishna is very happy to do that. No Ashtanga yogi could possibly dream of being so intimate. No jnani, yogis, what to speak of karmis. No one outside of pure devotees, and even outside of Vrindavan, no one would dream of climbing on Krishna's shoulders. If you come for Mangalartik and the pujari is climbing on the shoulders of the deities, you think this is a massive aparad. They'd get this person out of here. Although we have Radha Krishna deities, Prabhupada said we worship them as in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan. It's punctuality and deity worship runs on punctuality and cleanliness and rules. Why are we following all the rules? The Shastra is full of abandoning the rules. But why? Because we're not on that level. It's very important. We're sadhakas. So we worship them as Lakshmi Narayan, which means very strict formal procedures. You cannot, in Vaikuntha, you cannot climb on Lord Narayan's shoulders. You cannot joke in a familiar fashion with Lord Narayan. There's another book by Sanatana Goswami, it's Brihat Bhagavatamrita, which is a fascinating... Prabhupada said in one purport in Bhagavatam, everyone should read this book to understand the mellows of devotional service and how devotees relate. This Brihat Bhagavatamrita, there's always an Amrit thrown in, Bhakti Ras Amrit, because Amrit means nectar. If you're actually a real Vaishnav, then you're experiencing Amrit, or nectar. So, this Brihat Bhagavat Amrit by Sanatana Goswami is an amazing book because it actually gives you the perspective on different levels of devotion. In one sense, all devotees are perfect. There's no need to discriminate. But there are different flavors of transcendence. There are different intricacies or levels of transcendence. So this Brihat Bhagavat Amrit, it goes into tremendous... It's actually a very big book, and it goes into a lot of details. It's now available. It's an ISKCON publication by a disciple of Prabhupada named Gopi Puranadhanapur, an expert Sanskrit scholar who left his body recently. So it's a wonderful thing to read this book. Prabhupada recommended we read it. We should read... Prabhupada. The first 20 years, I only read Prabhupada's books. First 20 years, I was in ISKCON. I studied them scrutinizingly, Prabhupada said. So Bhagavatam... I just read the whole Bhagavatam over and over again for the first 10, 20 years, actually. So really we should have a great basis. And really you don't need anything other than Prabhupada's books. If you were stranded on a desert island And the only thing you had was the full Srimad Bhagavatam. You shouldn't lament. That is utterly sufficient. But because Vaishnava theology is so rich, and it's our heritage, there are so many further books by the great Acharyas, which of course Prabhupada composed his purports based on the Acharyas. So this Brihad Bhagavatam describes in great detail that there are different levels of intimacy in dealing with Krishna. And there was even a devotee named Gop Kumar. He was, during the course of showing the levels, he wound up in Vaikuntha. And he was trying to relate with Lord Narayan in a familiar fashion. And you can't do that. It's just it's a rasa bas, an inappropriate mixing of rasas. Rasa, actually, abas means reflection. Rasa bas. So it's like you cannot have the real rasa if you have an inappropriate mixture of rasas. So Vaikuntha is entirely a spiritual domain. It is free from all material tinges, and it's very exalted. If I ever get there, I'll be very grateful. But there's something much higher. There's something even higher, and that's Goloka Vrindavan. This is just what all the Acharyas in our lineage are describing. And why is it higher? We don't really have to say higher or lower, but it's more intimate. It's more intimate. You can do things with Krishna that you can't do with other forms of the Supreme Lord. And Krishna likes it. It's not that you're taking inappropriate liberties with Krishna by climbing on his shoulders. There are statements in the 10th canto that Krishna prefers that. He prefers that to the reverential hymns of the Vedas. He accepts if you want to worship in Shantaras, totally bona fide. He'll accept your prayers or dasya. But he really prefers, this is like very confidential psychology of God. The Muslims and Christians haven't the faintest idea. For them, Shanta and Dasya is everything. And they can't really reach that in a pure state anyway. So we have something so much higher beyond Shanta and Dasya. If a devotee is too much reverential, Krishna has to make some arrangements that they insult him. Like Rukmini, she was too much in awe and reverence. He tried to get her riled up and angry, and she wouldn't get angry. She just became afraid that she would lose. She was so pure. She was so submissive. The great Acharyas described that the consorts of the Lord are they're submissive. There's right wing and left wing, especially the gopis of Rajdham. So some of the gopis of the right wing category are very submissive. They always do whatever Krishna wants. Even Krishna neglects them and makes them brokenhearted by not coming to rendezvous with him. They never insult Krishna. They just accept Krishna with folded hands, whatever Krishna wants. And of course, that's pleasing to Krishna. But that, if that were the only mood, that would not be very... It wouldn't round out all the different varieties. So Krishna likes variety. So there's the left wing headed by Lalita, the most intimate associate of Srimati Radharani, and Lalita is expert at insulting Krishna heavily and chastising him severely. And she says things that if anyone else said it would be very offensive. This is the writings of the great Acharyas. But Krishna loves it. He really likes it. He really enjoys being chastised severely. Like in the Danakeli Lila, we know Mother Danakeli, a great Vaishnavi who comes to the temple. That the Danakeli means the Lila in which Srimati Radharani is going to worship the sun god. That's how she gets out of her house. There's a tricky arrangement that she get out of the house is not easy because Jatila and Kutila are like armed guards. They're expert and they are very suspicious. That's their service to Krishna. They insult Krishna like anything. This is the most far out thing of all. You can please Krishna by insulting him severely, by chastising him, calling him bad names, very heavy. What if we said would be a major aparad? When Shishupal was saying he got the Sudarsan Chakra, but Kutila and Jatila, they say it all every day, up and down, left and right. See, Goloka is just higher. This is the perspective. We have like there's a framework for theology. We have to put all the pieces in the right perspective. So Jatila and Kutila. Jatila is the mother of Abhimanyu. That's different than the Abhimanyu, of course, of Kurukshetra. That's Abhimanyu, the son of Arjuna. So there's an Abhimanyu in Goloka Vrindavan, and he is officially married to Srimati Radharani. And Abhimanyu's mother is Jatila and sisters Kutila. So they're very suspicious of Srimati Radharani. They are scrutinizing her conduct all the time. And she gets out of the house only because she was forced to follow orders of Purnamasi, the great disciple of Narada Muni. Purnamasi, she's one of the elderly, very super austere Matajis in Vrindavan, and she's like the spiritual master, so she gives orders and everyone has to follow them. So Jatila was forced to release Srimati Radharani. Every day she goes out to worship the sun god. There's a deity of Suryadev. This is another funny thing. There's deity worship in Goloka Vrindavan. Worship of devas, deva worship. Worship of devas. And of course there's all over the place in Bhagavad Gita and everywhere else, it says don't worship the devas, but the highest devotees are worshiping devas. Why are they worshiping devas? Because it's like a replica of Varnashram Dharma. Goloka Vrindavan has what appears to an external observer as a replica of Varnashram Dharma, simply to arrange the funny, humorous and deep loving relationships that Krishna has. Like Madhu Mangal, he's a Brahmin. And he comes to Krishna and says, if you don't offer me things I want, I feel like ladus and other stuff, and if you don't respect me and give me what I want, I will not bless you. And if I don't bless you, all of your relationships will fail. He comes like this. I'm a Brahmin and you're a Vaishya. Obviously you're in an inferior position, Madhu Mangal says to Krishna. All for Krishna's pleasure. This would be offensive in any lower state. See, we have to see how different it is from Bhagavatam, like a sixth canto, people offering prayers and rules and regulations and getting a spiritual master when you offended your previous, when Indra offends Brihaspati by neglect, then he's in big trouble and the demons conquer him and everyone's offering prayers and reverentially. And it's a very serious business there. But it's in Goloka Vrindavan, it's all a big joke. So Radharani gets out and she goes to a deity of Suryadev and she has to bring milk products on the way. So the Dana Keli Leela is where she is accosted by Krishna and the cowherd boys when there's a narrow passage and Krishna doesn't know which way she's going to go. Srimati Radharani has various options and Krishna has spy parrots headed by Vichakshana. And Srimati Radharani has a network of spy parrots, so it's like counter warfare and counter warfare. Because Srimati Radharani doesn't want to be interrupted. She has to get to the deity carrying the yogurt and milk products. Actually, she, in her heart, the greatest thing she wants is to associate with Krishna. But she has to play the rules, so she doesn't want to be accosted. She has all these spy parrots, and Krishna has a whole bunch of spy parrots. And Vichakshana is expert at outsmarting Radharani's spy parrots and getting the info on which path that Radharani is going to take. So, because she goes by Govardhan, there's various routes, and there are narrow valleys and ravines, and it's all very intricate. And space and time are enlarged and contracted according to Krishna's desire. Because space and time are cruel masters in the material world, but they're servants of the devotees in the spiritual. Space and time are personified personalities in Goloka Vrindavan, and they're servants of it. Everything is personified. There's dull matter in the material world because we've come here to imitate God, so we don't want to see Krishna. So he expands his energy and it disguises himself. This is like Krishna in disguise. Metal, wood, and everything else is Krishna in disguise because we don't want to see him. But in the spiritual world, all elements are personified. All the weapons of the Lord, the Shaktis, and everything is totally personified. So time is personified and is engaged in serving the devotees. So time can be expanded, as we know from Krishna book in the Rasa Dance. Krishna expanded to 4 billion years. From 12 hours was expanded to 4 billion years. That's inconceivable, actually. It's beyond human comprehension. In Einstein's theory of relativity, you'd have to be traveling at 99.999% of the speed of light to have a time dilation of a factor of a billion, because 4.3 billion years, that's 10 to the ninth, that's a billion times a year, so it's a time expansion factor of more than 10 to the ninth, so you'd have to be traveling almost the speed of light in Western physics to have that kind of time dilation. That's the technical term in Einstein's general theory of relativity. Time dilation. But because all the rules are very stringent, the material energy is very cruel, it's like an implacable and cruel master. But in the Goloka Vrindavan, it's all fun and games. So Krishna just feels like making the night longer. To reciprocate with pure devotees, this is a very important point. Krishna does magical tricks in Goloka Vrindavan because he wants to reciprocate with pure devotees. That's his whole business there, how to please his devotees, and the devotees' whole business, how to please Krishna. That's only business in Goloka Vrindavan. We really made a horrendous mistake by coming here. We're missing out on all the fun. Coming here to work hard like an ass and have a body that gets old and sick, that was really a big mistake. It's all fun and games in Goloka Vrindavan. And actually, once you reach a relatively advanced stage here in this world, it's all fun and games internally. Even when Prabhupada was fighting with Mr. Nair for Juhu, Mr. Nair tried to cheat the devotees. He made a contract and broke the contract and took back the money. And he hired bulldozers to destroy the temple for Radha, Rasavihari, and Juhu. Prabhupada was fighting like anything. He was writing letters. The devotees gave up. At one point, the devotees, headed by Brahmananda and Tamal Krishna, they thought it was too difficult. They called Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, we gave up the land. We gave it back to Mr. Nair." And Prabhupada said, "I'm the last man who will surrender my property to this rogue, this rascal." Prabhupada, externally, his disciples said he was up all night and he was agitated. He couldn't translate his normal Bhaktivedanta purports, but he was actually in ecstasy. If you're an advanced devotee, you're always in ecstasy. When Hanuman was fighting with Rakshasas, invading Lanka, so many difficulties, looked like a big struggle. It's simply internally, it's like play and fun. This is amazing. Or Arjuna. It's actually all fun and games if you're a pure devotee. It externally looks like you're working hard, but you reach a reservoir of internal power that you cannot be disturbed by anything. That's what yoga means. It means it's unbreakable. It's an unbreakable internal state of devotional service to Krishna. Prahlad Maharaj couldn't, his smaranam couldn't be invaded by anything. So this is actually possible to achieve this state. So don't think when you see devotees suffering, so-called suffering, advanced devotees are not suffering at all. It's part of their game, their fun and games in relishing relationships with Krishna. If you're not advanced, you do suffer. The neophyte devotees do suffer a lot. So it's in our interest to get it in gear and advance towards the higher stages. Why remain in the lower stage? Lower stage means struggle. Lower stage means struggle. That's all it is. No taste for the holy name, hard work, struggle, getting angry at spiritual master. Why did he give me so much difficulty work? Getting angry at temple authorities, too much difficulties. I'm fried, Prabhu. I'm fried. If you're fried, it means you're not Krishna conscious. Prahlad Maharaj was literally being fried. He was thrown in like a giant pakora. He was thrown in boiling oil. That's not my speculation. He was literally being fried externally, but internally. See, the internal you have control over. You don't have control over externals, what's going on. You cannot control the material energy, but you can control your state of consciousness. That's within your power. But you can't control your state of consciousness unless you surrender to Krishna. You have to be willing to do anything to please Krishna. Then you actually become aloof from the material energy. You can't trick Krishna. Krishna's sitting in your heart. If you want power, yogic powers, without surrendering to Krishna, then Krishna provides an arrangement, like Hiranyakasipu went off to Mount Mandara. But he did austerities for thousands of years. He had to stand on his toes for 1,000 years in the anthill. The ants build up a whole thing. There was a giant anthill. This is not my speculation. It's right in the seventh canto. A huge anthill built up, and the ants had a Sunday feast. They ate away his whole body. His body was a Sunday feast for the ants. And he didn't move. He didn't even flinch. So you can, if you're ready to do that, you can get mystic powers without surrendering, without devotion to Krishna. Or other yogis, it's full, the Shastra is full of what you have to do if you don't want to take the path of devotion, but you want to be like a macho man, you want to be totally powerful, but not surrendering to Krishna. Then you open yourself up for klesha. In the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna innocently asked, he knew very well, which is better, impersonal path or the personal path? This is the beginning of chapter 12 in Bhagavad Gita. So Arjuna asks Krishna. And Krishna says, if you take to the impersonal path, it's like bargaining for trouble. Klesha is the word used, difficulties, sufferings. There's already enough suffering. We don't need any more. But if you're proud, you have to take that. This is the penalty. Here's the penalty for being puffed up. You have to work hard like an ass, either to be a karmi, or actually vikarmi. You have to work very hard to arrange the kashipus, the Hiranya. If you have to get a lot of Hiranya to arrange for the kashipus, so that's hard work if you want to be a vikarmi. And being a karmi is also very hard work because you have to be elevated. Muchukunda, there's in around chapter 50 in the Krishna book, Muchukunda is praying to Krishna. And he describes in great detail what all the stuff he had to do when he was a king to prepare to go to Svargaloka, all the anxieties and yagyas and rituals and demigods. That's to be a karmi, a proper karmi. And that's so much work. And Muchukunda said, after all that, I get a little bit of pleasure when I go in the inner palace with my wives, and I have to work so hard for just a little bit of pleasure. He says it right there. He says, for a little bit of pleasure. It's a very brilliant chapter, actually. Muchukunda. So he said, I'm giving up this nonsense program. Now I surrender to you. Krishna says, I'll give you anything you want. Krishna appeared on the scene and said, I'm very pleased with you, and I'll give you anything you want. And just imagine what a materialist would say. He would just go like wild. His eyes would dilate. Big eyes, he'd pull out his shopping list, all the stuff he wants. Because his heart is vacant, it's empty. The karmi and vikarmi, their heart is so empty. There's nothing inside but for a devotee, there's everything inside. There's Krishna Leela running 24 hours a day, like television, Prabhupada said, about the Damodar Leela. When Satyavrata Muni, he composed the Damodar prayers, it's from the Padma Purana. Satyavrata Muni says, I don't want anything but pastimes of the Lord playing constantly in my heart. And Prabhupada says the advanced devotees, their heart is full with Krishna Leela. They can sit down anywhere on a park bench and just be absorbed in ecstasy. Actually, in Leelamrita, there was one Turkish Jew named Mr. Rubin, and he noticed Prabhupada was going here and there, and he thought, this Prabhupada is an elderly gentleman, very respectable. So he didn't know anything, because he was not, but he could see Prabhupada was somehow special, so he sat down and he was talking to Prabhupada, and he got the feeling, this man is in ecstasy all the time, even though Prabhupada had a very grave demeanor, and he was in a very difficult situation. No, he had no results in his preaching. He had no external results. He was working very hard in the beginning. From September 65 till June 66, there was no visible success for Prabhupada. All kinds of difficulties. One difficulty after another, dealing with the neophyte people, drug addicts, all kinds of crazies. Prabhupada had to tolerate so much. He was in a railway car, room 307, up on 59th Street, something. It's in the Leelamrita. And people would come to see him, and in the same room where Prabhupada, there were some crazy people doing hatha yoga postures. And another man came in and asked, what is he doing? And Prabhupada said, I don't know what he's doing. He had no way to preach. He had just had to tolerate all this craziness for 9 months. Anyone else would have given up. And he writes in March of 66, when there was snowfall, he was alone. I'm celebrating Gaur Purnima alone. All my god brothers are in India celebrating in the Holy Dham, and I'm alone in New York City. But I'm not really alone. I have the order of my Guru Maharaj. Don't think it was a picnic for Prabhupada. He had to undergo so many austerities. For us, the austerities are a test to show our devotion. For Prabhupada, who's already pure and doesn't need any purification, the austerities are arranged so later on for his glorification. So later on, all the devotees could realize how great a soul he was, that he was willing to tolerate all that. Because he didn't have to do that. He was pure in heart. He could have sat down in Vrindavan in ecstasy. So Prabhupada's position is truly extraordinary. We can hardly imagine. So this Turkish Jew, Mr. Rubin, he understood this person is somehow, he's like different than everybody else. He's got some inner shakti. He has some power and potency. I don't know what because you couldn't know because he doesn't know, I have any jnana. But he was attracted and he began talking to Prabhupada and he said, you're an elderly gentleman and why are you going through all these difficulties? I see you're trying to sell your books all over, trying to put them on consignment and bookstores. And why are you doing all this difficult stuff? What is it all? And Prabhupada said, I have more than 100 temples packed up with devotees and many books. Just a few years are separating me from them. That's a miraculous statement if you think about it. Prabhupada actually saw the future. It's called Trikalagya. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also, 100 years ago, he was sitting across the Jalungi. He has a house there, across the Jalungi from our Mayapur. The Adbhuta Mandir, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes about the Adbhuta Mandir. Adbhuta means wonderful and Mandir means temple. He saw, Bhaktivinoda Thakur saw 100 years, more than 100 years ago, what we're building today. He actually saw it by spiritual power. And Narada Muni also, in Krishna book, he goes to Krishna and tells Krishna, very soon I'll see you kill Shishupal and then Dandavakra and Vidurata and all these people. Narada Muni actually could see the future. See, the Vaishnavas have all kinds of powers, but they don't even want to have power. They just want to love Krishna. So, all these wonderful things in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, all the different levels of intimacy and devotion are described in great detail. And each time, Gop Kumar, he began on the earth planet and he got a mantra from his guru and he chanted the mantra. And he was so expert, he was so austere and devoted to get back to Godhead that he just, by chanting his mantra, he kept going to higher and higher levels and meeting up with higher and higher devotees. And at each stage, the devotees were always humble, like whenever Narada Muni was also, he would go around and glorify different Vaishnavas to find out who is the greatest. So when Narada Muni would come to Yudhisthira, and he would glorify Maharaj Yudhisthira, and Yudhisthira would say, I'm not really worthy of all this glorification. Actually, Prahlad Maharaj is much superior. I think it started first with, who did it start first with? Yeah, there was a Brahmin from South India, so yeah, it works its way up. It's very systematic. So it works as one. Narada Muni goes to one great king and says, "You're the best Vaishnava." Begins glorifying him, and the king says, "No, I'm attached to material enjoyment. Look, here's this Pukka Brahman. He's chanting mantras. He's so renounced. I'm just a householder. I'm totally attached." Even a great devotee always says like that. So he goes to the Brahman, and the Brahman says, "No, I'm nothing." Narada Muni glorified, "No, what am I? Am I useless? No one. I have no intimate connection with anyone. You should actually go to Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj is far superior." Maybe I skipped some intermediaries. So when he gets to Prahlad Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj says, "No, I'm not very glorious at all. All I can do is remember the Lord. He didn't appear before me until after so many trials. I had to be tested. I'm in the lower stages. You should see the Pandavas. Krishna became their messenger." So then Narada Muni goes to the Pandavas and glorifies them left and right, up and down. And Yudhisthira says, "No, I'm nothing. You should see Hanuman. He did incredible. I may have inverted a few because my memory is imperfect. I think you have an outstanding memory. So you can correct." But the point is, the basic point is that each devotee always thinks that I'm nothing. So if we're actually thinking that we're something big, we're in deep trouble. We may actually do something, some very serious service, like Parameshwara, he does 20,000 Bhagavad Gita's a year. But that's because of the power. He's been empowered to do that by the Lord. And as soon as you think you're the doer, then you lose everything, actually. As soon as you get carried away with delusions of grandeur, that's the program of the mind. It has a whole internal delusion of grandeur. So we take it, this wonderful message from Brihad Bhagavatamrita is that all the great devotees think that they're nothing. I don't know how they can do it honestly, because as soon as I do a little something, I get really puffed up. So I don't know how they can honestly think that they're not very advanced when they're obviously unbelievably advanced. But everything about a pure devotee is inconceivable. So how we, not only that, but so many things about pure devotees are inconceivable, how they can do so many things that they do. So that's just one of the inconceivable aspects of their psychology, of the Mahabhagavat. The greatest Vaishnav, one of the greatest Vaishnavs of all, is Krishna's Kavraj Goswami. And he writes in Adi Lila chapter 5, what does he say? He says, anyone who remembers my name, he loses all the results of his pious activities just by remembering my name. And if you speak my name, you become sinful. And he's really saying he truly believes that. He actually feels like that. How can it be possible? Because Krishna's Kavraj Goswami is so exalted. We actually don't realize how exalted he is. Not only was he selected to write Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is an unbelievable shastra, actually, but he also wrote Govinda Lilamrita, which describes in great detail the Ashta Kaliya Lila of Radha and Shamsundra in Goloka Vrindavan. And that book is so intimate, it's actually beyond what most devotees should read. You have to be very careful because it's very intimate. And Prabhupada did not give us these things. But I'm just giving you some insight into how this Krishna's Kavraj Goswami was so unbelievably exalted. We shouldn't read Govinda Lilamrita, but the pastimes of Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan are divided into 8 3-hour intervals. That's why it's called Ashta Kaliya Lila. Although there's no time in the spiritual world, this is another fascinating thing. There's no time in the spiritual world, but it's time to the minute. If you read the Govinda Lila, it says at 3:36 a.m. begins the Nishant Lila. 3:36 a.m., not 3:37. So you might think, oh, Krishna's just like me. If you're a businessman, I have to go to work at 5:45. I have to get on the train to go to work. Krishna has to be somewhere at 3:36 a.m. That would be a big misunderstanding because as I mentioned, time is a fluid entity in the transcendental Goloka Vrindavan. But still, it says that. If you read, the Nishant Leela begins at 3:36 a.m. and then the next Leela begins at some 6 something. I forget, 6:24. But it's time to the minute. It kind of blew my mind. How can it be? Because why should Krishna be forced to be somewhere at a particular time? But he's not forced. Time is a servant. It's a magical and mystical potency. And Krishna likes a framework. It's a general framework within which many pastimes occur. This is Ashta Kaliya Lila. So he wrote this book, and it's so advanced, you couldn't imagine. And even Chaitanya Charitamrita, like Madhya chapter 14, has when Marj Pratap Rudra goes into the garden and massages the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya after Ratha Yatra. Ratha Yatra is Madhya chapter 13. Lord Chaitanya dancing in ecstasy. It's an unbelievable chapter. Madhya chapter 13. Lord Chaitanya dancing. He exhibited ecstasies that are not even, they're beyond the Ashta Sattvika Vikara of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. The standard eightfold ecstasies of a pure jiva soul, the Ashta Sattvika Vikara. Sattvika means of pure devotees and Vikara means transformation, like Romanchakam Ashru. We sing it every morning. Sometimes we sing it mechanically, but it's not mechanical. It's very exalted. Rom ancha means, the Roma means hair. Roma ancha means hair standing on. Romancha kampashu taranga bhajo. We sing every morning, actually. Kampa means quivering. If someone quakes, that's like an earthquake, kampa. Romancha kampa ashu means tears. Taranga means waves. Bhajo, his bhajan, his worship of Krishna is so exalted that it just happens automatically. He doesn't try to show off. The real devotees don't show off. It just happens automatically. This is their position. A real devotee tries to restrain his ecstasies. The sahajis, whatever little bit they get, whatever little bit of rasa basa they get, sneaking through from some slight rays of sunlight from Goloka Vrindavan, they try to show off. The sahajis, they want everyone to know how advanced they are. They want to make sure that you know. That there's no doubt in your mind about how advanced I am. That's the Sahajiya program. But what is the pure devotee, like Prabhupada had to struggle to restrain his ecstasies, and a few times they slipped out, like in Los Angeles. He began crying in the middle of chanting Jai Radha Madhava and couldn't go on with the class. The class ended, and Prabhupada just had to leave, and everyone was, he said, now just chant Hare Krishna. It was rare, it was only one or two occasions, Atlanta in 75 and Los Angeles. I forget the exact date. Earlier in Los Angeles, I can find it for those devotees who are sticklers for precision, which we should be. So they're Los Angeles early on, and devotees didn't know what to do. They had never seen, these were like brand new devotees. And they didn't know, the word sahaji, they didn't know, and they'd never seen Indians. It was like in the late 60s. So they just saw Prabhupada go into ecstatic trance, and tears were pouring out of his eyes. And it's not that Prabhupada wanted to do that, but he was just so struck with wonder because he had been working hard in the streets of New York City, no result. And he went to San Francisco, and there was some result, but they were not really taking responsibility, as I explained in yesterday's class. Jayananda was the only one who was very responsible, and the other devotees were very neophytes. So, yes, Krishna was reciprocating, but after a few years, Krishna reciprocated big time by sending very sincere, super serious devotees. So Prabhupada, when he saw that Krishna had reciprocated by sending so many devotees who were sold out, book distributors, they were like, their hearts were completely surrendered. And just a couple years ago, they were ordinary materialists. That is magic. That is actually magic. And I've been trying to preach at colleges for 30 years, and I hardly have seen anyone become only like Krishna Kumar Prabhu in San Diego is now a really great book, because there's someone I preached to. So out of 30 years, I can barely make one. I can't even do that. Of course, it's Krishna doing it. So, you know, after 30 years, I can barely make one serious devotee. And Prabhupada, he made, you know, hundreds of exalted devotees. So, you know, we can just imagine how ecstatic it is, how much he was feeling Krishna's reciprocation. So he tried to restrain his ecstasies. The devotees saw Prabhupada trying to restrain his ecstatic symptoms, but they couldn't be restrained because it's something extraordinary, actually, to see Westerners becoming Krishna conscious big time and going to other continents and starting up whole new yatras and succeeding where it's impossible to succeed. So Prabhupada, he couldn't restrain his emotions. That's why we should realize that serving Prabhupada is actually our best hope at advancement. Serving Prabhupada's mission is our best hope for advancement. So the special feature of this Brihad Bhagavatamrita is that every devotee thinks all their devotees are better. They're always saying, even though they're actually on a level that is already so high, it's not even comprehensible to us how high they're on. Like Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. And Prabhupada makes sure in the purport, he says, don't you believe it when he says that. Then you make a big offense. He says, anyone who hears my name loses the results of all his pious activities. If you took it literally, you wouldn't even read the book. You'd close the book at that point. Uh-oh. Obviously, this person is very sinful. I better close the book. If you hear my name, you lose all the results. If you speak my name, you become sinful immediately. And I'm actually, beyond all that, I'm lower than Jagga and Madai. Jagga and Madai were not as bad as me because they were born in Brahmin families. They had a little bit of material attachments, but Lord Chaitanya freed. But actually, I am the worst. I'm the most sinful, the most duplicious, the most sinful person. And I'm lower than a worm in stool. That was the conclusion of his analysis. If I say it, I'm doing that because I want everyone to think I'm really humble. When I say it, it's because I'm putting on a show. It's a calculated strategy. It's a devious and calculated strategy for aggrandizement. When Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says it, it's from the heart. But how is he saying it? It's not. I can't even imagine how he's saying it. We cannot really imagine, actually. But he's truly sincere. He's not putting on a false show. He genuinely thinks like that. But he's so exalted. He's writing about what Radha and Krishna are doing out in the groves of Nikunja, you know, Ratikeli. He's writing about Ratikeli Siddhyai. That's in Govinda Lilamrita. And it's so many chapters. And I have to back away. It's really intimate. It's a very exalted book. we can't even read it. And he's honestly saying, I'm lower than a worm and stool. How is it possible? If I composed a book like Govinda Lilamrita, I would be like on the internet telling everyone, look, just see what I wrote. I mean, I'm so advanced. You can't imagine. I'm so detached. That's what how can it be that he's truly thinking he's lower? How can it, I don't understand. But there are many things we don't understand. But it's so inspiring just to read about it, his position. And he was 90 years old. He said, my memory is not working. But still I'm writing. I don't know how the pen is moving. He said, my hand doesn't work. I'm shivering too much. He's 90 years old. It says there in the Chaitanya Charitamrita when he would compose the book. But see, he's running by mystic power. Matta smita jnanam apohanam cha. Everything in devotional service runs by mystic power. Bhagavad Gita 15:15. Matta smita jnanam apohanam. It's all coming from Krishna, so we should be very humble. And neurophysiologically, I won't go into it. It is really, we're actually completely dependent on Krishna. We should be humble. The far out thing is we're puffed up, but we have very little powers. We have no material power and very little devotional credit, and we're very puffed up. And Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami has superhuman powers, and he's totally humble. How do you calculate that? I don't understand how to put those facts together. The greatest devotee has the highest powers, materially and spiritually, but he's totally humble. So we have to understand that we're on the highest path. There's nothing more wonderful than trying to become a pure devotee. It's just like inconceivable. So that's why we're going to have to do a lot of work. You have to go every day we have to get up every day for Mangal Arati. For us, we have to do sadhana bhakti. But it's worth it, because what you're going to get is the highest thing. And even in the struggle stage, like Bhakta Brandon is a relatively new devotee, 1 year maybe, and he's dancing like 2 years. He's dancing like a jubilant peacock in Gaur Artik, singing after 2 years, or even after a couple months. You see, it's really, although sadhana seems like it's hard work, it's actually not hard work, because Lord Chaitanya helps you. So the Kala Danda is about to descend on my head, the rod of time. See, we're under the constraints of time, and the clock has informed me that I have to stop. Although we just started getting into the juicier pastime, so are there any questions?
I was just wondering, you were speaking about how in Goloka, time is a servant of Krishna meant to facilitate the loving interactions. So I was wondering if you could share some advice on how to develop a similar mood of loving interactions with other devotees here
to that prepare we do. Consciousness. There are many things you can do to help other devotees. Like if you're on book distribution, when you drive up to check the air in the tires, because we're dealing with material things, you could jump out first and check the tire pressure. And you can fill the water in the radiator, and you can, when it's time to shop, you can go, and you'll make tremendous advancement. I have direct experience of this. On Warp Tour, 2006, 2007, that's why I'm warped, because I went on Warp Tour 2 years in a row. So, but I took advantage of the Warp Tour, the summer tour, to serve all the other devotees. They were all better than me. It was Bhrigupati Prabhu and Parameshvara. Madhukari had not joined yet. And Ananda Vidya Prabhu, he was on Warp Tour in those days. So I took it upon myself, because I was the lowest. I was doing 10 times less books than everybody else. So I thought, this is a hint that I should, it's time for some Vaishnav Seva. So I did all the things. I drove extra hours so they could rest more. I shopped. I footed the air in the tires. There's a lot of things to do, and it's a lot of austerities. And simply by serving the pure devotees, I never got empowered for book distribution, but I got devotional credits from serving the great souls. I got attachment for reading Shastra. An attachment for chanting and renunciation. You can eat less and sleep less. The fruits of service to the great souls are wonderful fruits. Even you may not, somehow my brain doesn't have the capacity to become a great book distributor. But I got other wonderful fruits of devotional service by serving pure devotees all over the place, left and right, in the Shastra, up and down. Vrindavan Das Thakur says it at least 20 or 30 times. in Chaitanya Bhagavat, service to pure devotees. Even Lord Chaitanya was washing Srivas Thakur's dhotis and hanging them up and then folding them. It's directly stated in his Navadvip Leela. The first 24 years of Lord Chaitanya's Leela was Navadvip as a householder. He was a grihastha. If you look badly at grihasthas, then you have to be a little careful, because Lord Chaitanya and most of his, the exalted Nitya Siddha, Mahabhagavat, Uttamadikaris, like Advaitacharya, Srivas Thakur, all of these, practically all of them were grihasthas, amazingly enough. So we should be careful not to look down on grihasthas. That would be a great miscalculation. So all of these devotees, these devotees, associates of Lord Chaitanya, they're on the highest level. And by serving, if you do it like now, serving other devotees, especially book distributors, if you're not a book distributor and you serve the book distributors, you get tremendous mercy. So just by doing this, you develop attraction for hearing and chanting about Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. And by serving Gaur Nitai or hearing about Gaur Nitai, then gradually you reach the stage of attraction for Radha and Krishna. Radha and Krishna is way up there. It's way beyond. If we try to read about Radha and Krishna now, we make offenses in our mind. We cannot do it properly. We're too conditioned. So Prabhupada said in the beginning, we worship Guru and Gauranga. You worship your spiritual master by the mission. The mission is everything if you're serious. Parameshwar, that's all. He's mission personified every time he gives class. He's totally absorbed in the mission. And along with the mission, we're doing our hearing and chanting and service. So all of these things add up to a package. There are many opportunities for service. If you're looking, if you really want to serve the Vaishnavas, there's no shortage of opportunities.
Hare Krishna. You mentioned about the different moves of Krishna and the gopis, the right wing and the left wing, headed by Lalita. I was wondering where Chandravali.
She's head of the right wing party. It's good you asked. She's the sister of Srimati Radharani, Chandravali. Chandra means moon, and Avali means like a large number. So Chandravali means she's as beautiful as a row of moons. She's fantastically qualified, but she's actually subordinate to Srimati Radharani. Actually, they're all expansions. The first point is, every single one of the gopis are expansions of Radharani, but they have their own personality. When we hear about expansion, we think that they're somehow, they can't function independently. This is the far out, another one of the inconceivable things in Vaishnav theology. Krishna expands. Actually, we're Vibhinangsha expansions. All of us are actually expansions of Krishna. But we're different from Krishna. We have our own likes and dislikes. I may get angry at Krishna and hate Krishna and be different, but I'm an expansion of Krishna. See, we have to understand what an expansion means. There's Vibhinangsha and Svangsha. Vibhu and Anu. So there's these Svayam expansions have the same power. They are fully as powerful as the Lord Himself. Sva means one's own, like Svarup means your own form in the spiritual world, Svarup. I'm sorry I'm always saying these basic things that you already know. I think I'm tormenting. I hate to, but everyone is on different, it's hard to give a Bhagavatam class because everyone is on so many levels. There's some personalities here who are very exalted, and I torture them with introductory details. So Svayam, there's Svangsha and Vibhinangsha. Angsha means part. Kala and Angsha. Kala means time. So you have to get the A's. If you mix up the A's, you get in big trouble. Kala, first A is long and second one short. That means time, like we're reading in the purport. Kala. And Kala means an expansion or Angsha. Just like devotees say, Lokanath, Lokera Jivana, literally Jiva means tongue. It's Lokanath Lokera Jivana. And Jiva means soul or enlivens. Dhanavir Swami taught me this. For 27 years I sang it wrong, and everyone sings it wrong. Lokanath Lokera Jivana. Actually it's Lokanath Lokera Jivana. Because Jiva means tongue, and anyone who knows Sanskrit would start cracking up. Because we're singing Lokanath has a giant tongue. The song is composed by Narottam Das Thakur. He's one of the greatest. He's so exalted. He got the, when Lord Chaitanya put his ecstasies in the Padma River, Narottam bathed, he got the full. Narottam Das Thakur is the full recipient of the ecstasies of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The prema of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was deposited in the Padma River and given to, so Narottam Das Thakur is one of our greatest acharyas. And the songs, that's why the morning program songs are so important, to meditate on the meanings of these songs. So Lokanath Maharaj was a spiritual master of Narottam Das Thakur. And he was so exalted, that's a whole nother class. He didn't even want any disciples, he was so humble. So anyway, Lokanath, Lokera means all the worlds, and it is kind of tricky now, we have to be a little bit alert. Lokanath, Lokera, Loka in English is location. So Lokanath, Lokera means all, it means Lokanath enlivens the whole world, is what is being said. Lokanath, Lokera, Jivana. And Jivana, Jiva means actually tongue, like a nectar of instruction, one of the pushings, the Vachu Vegam and the Manasakrota Vegam. The Vega means pushings. So Jiva means tongue with a long A. Jiva, it's the first I is short. And Jiva with a long I and a short A in the end means the soul, the Jiva. Or it means to enliven, another meaning of that word. So we have to be really careful, otherwise we'll get into deep trouble. So Kala and Angsha, these are expansions of Krishna. Krishna has his own personal expansions. We're Vibhi and Angsha expansions of the Lord. And as Krishna expands into all kinds of Vishnu Tattva expansions, Srimati Radharani, and it's from Adilila chapter 4. So everyone should challenge me whenever I make one of these far-out statements. So it's in Adilila chapter 4, it says that the Lakshmis of Vaikuntha, the queens in Dwarka, and especially the gopis of Raj, Dham, are expansions of Srimati Radharani. But she expands and then they become separate persons who act differently and may even compete with Radharani. Like Chandravali is the sister, she competes, there's a heavy competition, and they may even say bad words about each other and insult each other. And so a heavy rivalry, all for Krishna's pleasure. Krishna loves this. Krishna eats it up. This is his life and soul. That's why everyone does, like why does Jatila and Kutila, they heavily blaspheme Krishna. They say really bad stuff about Krishna, like he's lumpata, he's a debauchee. In the eighth verse of Shikshastika, Lord Chaitanya says lumpata. Even if he's a lumpata, he's none other than my worshipable Lord. The final verse of Shikshastika, Lord Chaitanya is saying that whatever Krishna does, and this is our goal, we want to reach this stage. Krishna can crush me under, he can trample me under his feet and make me brokenhearted by not letting me see him. And after all, he's a debauchee, a lumpata. That's a heavy insult. Calling Krishna debauchee, that's offensive if you're not on the right level. But whatever Krishna is, he's none other than my worshipable Lord. And actually, you know, this last verse of Shikshastika, this eighth shloka, is actually paraphrased from Radharani in the final verse, the last chapter of Anchalila, chapter 20 of Chaitanya Charitamrita. It is actually the Shikshastika expanded. If you read the 20th chapter of Anchalila, it's an expansion of the Shikshastika. And there, that verse is spoken by Srimati Radharani herself. None other than, she is the most exalted of all devotees. We cannot even imagine. Sometimes we're puffed up that men are better than women, but actually the women hold the superior position. I hate to say it. I'm sorry to say it, but it's actually the truth. If you're in the bodily concept of life, you can lament that women are, there is no greater devotee than Radharani. There is simply no one who can even get close to her love for Krishna, her level of devotion, her willingness to sacrifice, to go to hell to save Krishna from 1 second's worth of headache. There's another leela that we won't talk about. But so she's saying that Krishna's a lumpata. Radharani is in the left-wing category, but she's not as left-wing as Lalita. There's even gradations within the right and left camp. Srimati Radharani is in the left camp, but she's sometimes submissive. Lalita is always hot-tempered. She lays into Krishna like anything. Like in the Dhanakela Lila, that's what I got, as usual, I get off track. When Krishna stops Radharani, when he finds out which route, and he actually stops and physically accosts Radharani and says, "You've got all this yogurt. Actually, I'm the king of Vrindavan. I'm the son of the king, and you owe back taxes. You've been coming through many times with all this, that's Dana Keli. Keli means Leela. Dana means like wealth or charity. Dana Keli. Leela. So, and Lalita steps forward when Krishna wants to physically arrest and take away all the yogurt that Radharani and the gopis are carrying on the head. So Krishna, Lalita steps up to the plate and protects Radharani, insults Krishna left and right and argues and defeats him. Because Radharani is Vrindavaneshvari. She's the ruler of Vrindavan. So Krishna actually says that he's the controller. It becomes a scriptural debate and Krishna's defeated, so he has to resort to trickery and by force he steals all the yogurt and the coward boys, they plunder the yogurt and they're eating up all the yogurt and Lita is saying, "You've insulted this chaste girl. She's just bathed and ready to worship Suryadev and now you've taken away all the goodies." Some of this is a nectar of devotion. Prabhupada, right in 1969, the boys were totally neophyte. Some of this is actually a nectar of devotion. Others of it, this is again Govinda Lilamrita and the higher things that the great acharyas are giving. But the reason why I'm saying this is that all of the gopis and all the lakshmis are expansions of Radharani. But an expansion means they can function independently. They have a different mood. They may have a totally different mood. Chandravali has a very different mood than Radharani. Lita and Vishaka and Induleka and Champaklata, these are the Ashta Sakis, the most exalted. And Rupa Goswami is actually Rupa Manjari. The Manjaris are servants of the Sakis. It's a great theology. When I first read it, I thought, this is unbelievable. The Christians haven't the faintest idea what's going on. Just the details. Prabhupada said in one lecture, he will attract people by the details of the Shastra. If you're actually looking for God, I had no background. I come from a family of scientists. But when I became interested in God, the Christian theology, there's nothing there. They're mainly interested in making God their servant, providing material benefits. What is God himself doing? Doesn't matter. Just as long as he serves us, he's cool. He's cool as long as he serves us, and when he stops serving us, then he doesn't exist. No, I don't mean to be there are many sincere Christians. They're very austere, like St. John of the Cross did austerities we can't even imagine. Or St. Francis of Assisi. So to put things in right perspective, there are many very serious Christians, actually. So I don't want to, and serious Muslims. But I'm just saying, if you have the whole framework, I get a lot of inspiration from reading about great Christian saints. They were more austere than most ISKCON devotees, to be honest. Instead of asking for more pakoras and chutney, they're out doing austerities. Not that there's anything wrong with pakoras and chutney. But just, actually, it's their credit, like St. Francis of Assisi. He was so advanced without any deities and without Tulsi and without the holy name. I wouldn't stand a chance. You know, a snowflake's chance in hell of becoming advanced. And he was really advanced, Prabhupada said. St. Francis of Assisi, he would embrace trees and say, "Brother tree and sister cat." He saw everyone as spirit soul, brothers and sisters. St. Francis of Assisi, or St. John of the Cross, was so austere. If you read, I've read about their lives. He did austerities that none of us can do. He was captured, he was eating salted. They gave him only salty fish to eat. And no water to drink, and he was always humbly accepting everything. He was starved and put through terrible austerities, and he developed all kinds of mystic powers. He floated out of the prison, St. John of the Cross. He actually floated. He developed Laghima City. He didn't want it, actually. And who was that? St. Teresa. She was praying that the mystic powers get taken away because she didn't want to be honored. Some of them were really, really... St. Joseph of Cupertino was like Raghunath Das Goswami. Now we're all getting way over time. But some of these Christian saints, actually I get tremendous inspiration, so I shouldn't be saying negative things. I didn't want to come off as saying bad things about other religions, and Prabhupada always glorifies Lord Jesus Christ in Madhyala chapter 15. There's a purport he calls. He says, Lord Jesus Christ. But I'm just trying to put everything in right perspective, that the modern Christians seem to be more interested in what God can do for them than what we can do for God, because they don't discuss what God himself is doing or what we would do, how we would be serving God.
On that topic of putting things in perspective, the purport was mentioning that the material compassion actually can become a great deterrent to one's spiritual life. You see, Maharaj Bharat gave up his spiritual practice. Now, when we go out, like on Sankirtan, and we're meeting with people, sometimes I'm trying to figure out the proper perspective, because perhaps from a Vedic Brahminical point of view, these Western countries, the people living there, Yavanas, Malechas, this would be one perspective, or maybe that's their actual position. But the devotees we see are so compassionate. Vasudev Dutt, and we're hearing the humility of devotees, that they're seeing everyone on a high level. So then when we go out, sometimes I may, if I look down on people at all, that's not good, because I'm not able to relate with them, it's not very sincere. On the other hand, if I'm really trying to put them on be merciful or something, and try to, you know, not think ill of them, but rather think, oh, these are spirit souls, they're just in a certain situation. And sometimes during interactions, if my consciousness is not fixed, then there can be, okay, then there's the compassion turns into like an affection, and I'm hanging out with this guy. Then later on you come back to the temple and you're like, what was that? Like, I'm not supposed to be intimate with these type of people,
It's best if you can actually see them as more advanced than yourself. The few times that I actually experienced really ecstatic feelings on book decision is when I somehow or other began to think that they're all better than me. What I was thinking is that I know more about devotional service, but I'm not very intense. I'm very lazy. I miss so many chances to serve Krishna. They're in ignorance. They don't even know about it. So they're actually better than me. I'm duplicitous. I've joined the ashram to have 3 full meals a day and a good place to sleep, and I'm basically lazy, taking advantage of the facilities. You can by some method, you can actually make a mental adjustment to make yourself lower than others, and then you'll find Sankirtan is very nectarian and you get a lot of mercy. Another avenue of approach is that a very short time ago, we were just like them. We're not really great paramahansas and mystic yogis with a backlog of tremendous austerities. At least I'm not. Maybe some of you are. I shouldn't speak. But I think most of us fall in the category of being pretty fallen amongst the fallen folks before we join. So is there really much difference between us and them? We're basically a thin coating of Vaishnava and a lot of Vikarmi. A mountain of Vikarmi with a thin veneer of sadhana bhakti over the top. I'm saying that about myself, and if the shoe fits, wear it. We say that's English slang. But it's valuable. If the lower you can think yourself, there are so many pastimes with Haridas Thakur and Vasudev Dutt. We're running out of time. As future classes unfold, this is like such a good point. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have talked about the other stuff, which is less relevant. I get carried away like with pastimes in Vrindavan, but I should have addressed this point, so you can actually educate me more and give me more guidelines, because I get carried away on the other side of things. That's how we should be thinking. How can we improve our relationships with others and not become, if you're too familiar with the karmis, you become like a vikarmi. You become like a vikarmi if you hang out with them too much. And if you take the holier-than-thou approach, holier-than-thou, you know, you kind of look down, then they pick up on it. You can't be effective. And it's not pleasing to Krishna either. It's actually not pleasing to Krishna. Even though, from one perspective, we are far superior, following 4 regular principles, you're initiated by a bona fide guru, you're practically out of the material world. If you don't mess up, you know, you're basically back home, back to Godhead. Initiated Vaishnav from a bona fide guru, and it's in the best sampradaya. We talked about all the exalted personalities, and your credits and your 16 rounds a day in front of Tulsi Devi and just seeing the deity in the sixth canto, there's a purport with Chitraketu Maharaj, anyone who just sees the deity and offers obeisance to the deity, your material desires are gradually being dried up just by coming every day to see the deities. I can show you that purport in the sixth canto with Maharaj Chitraketu when he finally saw Lord Sankarshan. It took him only 10 days, by the way. So if we've been hanging around the ashram for more than 10 days and we haven't seen Lord Vishnu face to face yet, that's another way to be humble. It took Maharaj Chitraketu, you could say, okay, he was a big attached householder. What did he do? He had a million wives, it says. 10 million. Okay, another class will be on how we better take the Bhagavatam literally and not make offenses by saying it's mythology. That's another subject matter. Higher dimensional space. Maharaj Ugrasena's bodyguards, 9 quadrillion bodyguards, they can't fit on the earth planet. It says in the 10th canto in the Krishna book. And that was just the personal bodyguards of Maharaj Ugrasena. See, if you read the Shastra carefully, your mind will be blown. Most devotees, unfortunately, are not reading carefully enough. Their minds should be blown. They should run and ask questions. What is this? It's impossible. How can 9 quadrillion bodyguards fit in the palace? Dvarka is only 96 square miles, it says. 96 square miles, so that's less than 10 miles by... Because 100 square miles is 10 miles by 10 miles. So 10 miles by 10 miles. And there's 16,000 palaces, so that took up a lot of it from the mundane geometrical calculation viewpoint. And Maharaj Ugrasena has his own palace, and in the palace, there are 9 quadrillion. It's in the Krishna book. Now you can say, I don't believe the Krishna book. That's an aparad. That hurts your advancement. If you relegate the Shastra to the realm of fantasy, you harm your spiritual advancement. But with quantum mechanics, you can understand how higher dimensional space comes in. That's another whole lecture. But the point is that there are ways that you can adjust your psychology before you go on book decision that will help you. It will help you to... The more humble you are, the better. Trinada pi sunitena. How many millions of times does Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami in Adi Lila chapter 8 says you should wear this around a thread around your neck. You should like write it on a ornate, like a piece of ivory or something or wood, and like you wear things around your neck and you put it on your neck. It's the most important verse for the sadhaka, Trinada pi. We could just talk about that for the next 3 months. That's everything in your spiritual life. But you say, how can these are low-class karmis, you know, and I'm such a good devotee. I mean, how can they be, how can I be inferior? So you have to, because we need to use our buddhi yoga. In the 10th, Bhagavad Gita chapter 10, text 10, Prabhupada says, bhakti yoga is buddhi yoga. So the buddhi has to kick in at some stage, hopefully soon. So when the buddhi kicks in, buddhi yoga, bhakti yoga is buddhi yoga, especially in sadhana. When you reach Raganuga, you're floating in ecstasy. You don't need any analysis. When you have no more anarthas, then the analysis phase is finished. The Sambandha Gyan analysis is finished because you're feeling ecstasy at every second. And you're naturally humble. Obviously, we're not there yet. So, what to do? Then you have to use our intelligence. A couple years ago, I was a fallen karmi. Actually, I was more fallen. I can give reasons. I was more attached. Personally, I was more attached than most people I preach to. I was very heavily attached to name and fame. I wanted to be a big scientist. That's why I studied physics initially when I was deeply in Maya. So I was more in Maya than most people. I was very much attached to sex life. I had many girlfriends. I was really a fallen personality. So I should cover my head and get off the Vyasa-san. But this is actually helpful. Now we can use this. How does this help you to think about it? Because I'm actually more fallen than the person I'm about to approach. And actually you'll see how you have a great day on Sankirtan when you think like this. It's actually true. If we dredge down deeply into our past, there's many skeletons in our closet. There's a lot of skeletons hanging around, at least in my closet. And here, there's another analysis. Whenever I get falsely proud, then Lord Chaitanya smashes me. I can't do any books. I've also gone... For a few days, I've gone for like more than a whole day and I couldn't distribute more than one or two books, and I was crying and begging, and I went back to the van and I was crying, and still Lord Chaitanya, he wouldn't relent. He's pushing, he's proving the point that we haven't the power to distribute a book. Are we such exalted souls that we can go out and distribute books on our own power? No, that's not the case at all. So this is now Sambandha Gyan, how to put your mind in the right framework so you can do book distribution every day, because most book distributors don't last their whole life. I joined in 82 and most of them are gone. 95% of the devotees who joined with me in San Diego in 1982 are gone. They're deeply off in the world of Maya because they didn't analyze these things. It's time for the buddhi to kick in. It's overtime for the buddhi. Okay, and I'm also overtime. I'm sorry. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki